You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast, the home of Scottish football banter.
A very good evening to the SFF podcast. My name is Dave. As you can tell, it's not John Blaisdell that's hosting this evening. It usually is Mr. John Blaisdell. But he's on a sabbatical at this precise moment in time, and we wish John all the best in terms of his time away from the SFF podcast. He'll be back sharper than ever, but he is away on a wee hiatus. But you have myself, Dave, as usual, that does the women's football stuff, and I'm delighted to say, that we are joined by Stephen Walver. First of all, Stephen, how are we this fine Wednesday evening?
I'm doing very well.
Fantastic.
I've been at the World Cup, so I'm kind of still readjusting into kind of normal life, and I'm kind of getting there slowly.
Have you got jet lag, Stephen?
No, well, it's kind of past now. Getting into work and getting kind of back to sort of normal life, and not just spending my days kind of watching football, going football, which obviously is the ideal, you know.
And she's came off the substitutes bench, but what a debut to start things off. Eva Murray, Eva, how are we?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, a bit like Stephen there. I've got a couple of weeks on him, so I've just about readjusted from my time in New Zealand and Oz. But yeah, very good.
So as you can tell, both Eva and Stephen were away at the World Cup in Australia and New Zealand, respectively. Eva, I'll start with yourself. Take it away. Just explain why you were there, how you went there, the overall extraordinary events that erupted at the World Cup, and just how it was a great spectacle for women's football in general.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. My pal decided probably about the Scotland Ireland match, which obviously put Scotland out of the playoff scenario. We decided that we would head over regardless, and we kind of called it the No Loyalties tour. So we hit 9 games, 4 cities. So we did Auckland, Wellington, Adelaide, and Melbourne, and basically just enjoyed it. I felt like there was a bit more, less pressure because Scotland hadn't obviously made it, but not really amazing experience. People we met by chance at one of the New Zealand matches into Vic Essen's family and friends, who obviously is plays for Rangers, which was really funny, but great to catch up with them as well. And I think for me, it was about, you know, two countries, Julia, where football really isn't the main sport, especially women's football. See all of them get told to attend their first kind of football matches, and just the legacy from it, from what we've seen. But no, the highlight match for me, probably two, were the USA-Netherlands match, which for me was the game that I wanted to kind of surround the trip around. I'm quite a big US Women's National Team fan, but for me, Netherlands became my kind of backup team, and it was amazing to see them, the two kind of, you know, heavyweights of the tournament, or what we thought heavyweights of the tournament, take each other on. And obviously the USA-Sweden match, where that very controversial was taken, and then the USA get put out. That was another highlight, and I totally thought I was going to be seeing Sweden Netherlands in that match. I thought the Netherlands were going to come second in their group, but the way it happened, the USA, and it was some atmosphere.
Pardon me. That just explains everything that happened at the World Cup when Australia players and Australia fans, sorry, were looking for, was it Mackenzie Arnold's goalkeeping shirt?
Yeah. I didn't get to see the Australians play, but I, the fact that everybody's after Mackenzie Arnold's shirt is incredible. I saw some people saying, "Oh, you can get our West Ham one instead because they're not doing the Matildas one just now." But yeah.
Absolutely. What was your highlight from the World Cup? Who was your star player?
I think I didn't get to see her play live, but I think it's kind of proven that Bon Matty was amazing. And I think also Amanda Ellister, I think she's quite under Arsenal. She had a really good World Cup too.
Absolutely. Do you think this is another highlight for women's football? We've seen it go last year, just how it brought women's football on the map again. Do you think this now will just push it up that extra level now?
Yeah, absolutely. I hope, I really do hope so. I think especially it'll raise the profile in places where who don't really have a you know a history of supporting women's football or you know getting involved in women's football. And I think that's because of two things, because of where it was and then you know like I say, Australia, New Zealand kind of picking that up and getting involved and getting interest in it. Also because of the expansion of number of teams who were put into the World Cup this time, in some countries who maybe it was their first time at the World Cup, you know, getting a chance, and I think a lot of people underestimated some of them, and we saw them get a wee bit further in the tournament. So yeah, absolutely, and even at home, I think and hope that it would you know increase the kind of visibility of women's football and actually show that there is a real interest in it, and if people, you know, and people get involved.
Absolutely, Eva. So, as we've touched upon, Stephen went the full yard and went to plenty more games. So, Stephen, tell us everything.
Yeah, well, similar to Eva, I was kind of planning when Scotland still had a kind of opportunity to go, but we had also kind of made the decision to kind of go anyway. I've been lucky enough to have been at the kind of last four women's tournaments, so our last three, should I say, before this one. So obviously went with Scotland to the Euros, was our kind of first one introduction to went to the World Cup. And we stayed on in the last World Cup and kind of went right through to the final. So and did the Euros last year down in England in a kind of similar manner. So we kind of thought we'll do this up far. It's kind of you know you want to kind of get the most of it as possible. So yeah, we based ourselves just in Australia. So we were just in Sydney. My daughter was just finishing school as well, so it was a kind of nice kind of chance to kind of not have to come back for the school holiday for the school starting again. So we took the full 5 weeks. From the kind of stayed in Sydney, they offered kind of stadium passes, so we were lucky enough to pass for the kind of Stadium Australia, which was the main one that took you up to the, and also the Sydney Stadium, which was a kind of smaller one but gave us kind of four or five group games. So we had 12 games in total, a real mix of teams. We saw England quite a lot in the kind of latter stages. We're at Australia, Ireland, the first game. In Australia, anyway, of the tournament, which was kind of amazing experience, and so Mark as well. But probably my highlight was Germany, Colombia. We saw that, which is a kind of a surprise one. You know, Germany had started really well. We kind of thought Germany are just going to do what Germany did. But both the atmosphere in that ground, the Colombian fans were just amazing. The number of them, the noise they made, just brought a real kind of energy and color to the whole thing, which was fantastic to see. And obviously, we're kind of right at that end of that whatever 97th minute winner went in, and the place obviously around about us just kind of went a bit crazy. So, and I think I saw that was the goal of the tournament has been awarded as well. So, really lucky to kind of see that one. But yeah, an amazing, amazing experience. As Eva said, there's just a lot less pressure. Like the Euros last time, and Scotland not being there, it kind of it is a bit gutting, but kind of just go and watch football and kind of pick a team on the day, support, which is great.
Absolutely. I think it's a great thing as well, Stephen, because when you look at everything in total reality, everybody was out on a Sunday morning with Spain shirts on, both in terms of this country and also across the water as well, where everybody was cheering on Spain, unless you were obviously of an English contingent.
Yeah, I have to hold our hands up and say our family was kind of a little bit split in the final.
Okay.
Some of us were supporting England, but yeah, no, I mean it was great, and it was great to see how the Australian kind of crowd took on and kind of really bought into it. And again, it's not the main sport out there; it's quite far down the pecking order. So it was great, kind of along to games just because it was an event and kind of being sucked up in the whole thing and the excitement of it. You know, the Australia games were just fantastic. Stadium Australia was, I think, 75,000-80,000, and you know it was full every single time. And probably my one moment of highlight, which I kind of enjoyed the most, was Sam Cahill on the semi-final. I mean, just the roar and the excitement, and obviously at that stage, that in that game I was supporting Australia. I kind of thought, right, this is them back in it. But just the sheer kind of that win, and obviously it was a stunning goal, was just kind of really up there. Just amazing experience.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. When you take the World Cup into consideration, what does Scott even want bring this question to yourself? What does Scotland need to do now to get to that next level? Do you think this World Cup kind of gives them that barometer, that yardstick where you can look at it and go, this is where we need to get to?
Yeah, I think Scotland were just incredibly unlucky to out in that playoff place, to be honest. I think if they got there, they probably would have, the World Cup. But yeah, I think they just need to keep doing what they're doing. I think they've got a strong team just now. You've got players playing across Europe just now and in the NWSL and stuff, and obviously in the WSL. And I think we've got some youngsters coming up who are showing a real promise. So I really do believe that like this next campaign, and it's a tough Nations League campaign they've got coming up, but I think it's exciting, and I think they need to keep doing what they're doing. I think what Pedro's kind of done with the team is I think it's been really, really positive. I think they just need to keep doing what they're doing. But yeah, I just think they're really unlucky not to make it this time.
Yeah, I mean,
Absolutely.
I think the last two tournaments, again, it has been kind of close. I mean, it feels as if we've been in a kind of rebuilding. Well, a combination of one of the games of maybe it was the Argentina game, and I think there was a kind of that left a kind of legacy for a while for a number of players, and obviously a lot of the kind of really senior key players were kind of coming to the end of their. Been a bit of a shift onto that kind of next generation, but the talent is there and the ability is there, so it's just a case of getting them playing in the right way, and hopefully we can get back to those tournaments because they're well, Scotland. The only thing that missing for me in the trip was Scotland, really, and being able to go and support Scotland at a World Cup is a really unique experience with men or the women. So if we could get that back at the next Euros, would be fantastic.
Stephen, we can obviously give you a book plug. You've done books from the, correct me if I'm wrong here, is it the Euros 2016, the World Cup, no, it'll be the Euros 2017, won't it? World Cup 2019.
It was really kind of based around the World Cup in 2019, but it's when I started writing it became the wider story, I guess, of kind of the Scotland national team and how it kind of got to that point, and probably quite importantly, given what's going on at the moment and post, it's just the kind of struggles and challenges that women's football has, particularly in Scotland, obviously that's been echoed and mirrored elsewhere, and very similar experiences. So the book is a kind of how they got to the World Cup. It's a kind of long run into that in terms of looking at what challenges kind of players of the past had to go through and had to kind of face just to be even able to play, never mind think about getting towards World Cups and stuff. So it's that kind of story very much from the kind of player's perspective. So that's why I hope we kind of get back to those tournaments, because obviously I wrote it after we just qualified for two and the team was kind of high, and unfortunately the last two they've not, but hopefully we can get to that and get this generation of both players and fans that kind of experience is amazing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've got to touch on a sour note to end this segment of the show up because obviously there was an unfortunate moment from a women's football perspective in the Spain England final. Obviously, I want to keep this very brief, but Stephen, I'll start with yourself because you're a male. It's important that the male contingent that love women's football, such as me and you, aren't tarred with this brush that we obviously witnessed a week past Sunday.
Yeah, I think it's important that women's football. I mean, to me, kind of what has happened is kind of the story of women's football, and it's sad that they kind of after such a broke so many barriers, both in terms of numbers of clubs, numbers of nations playing, and kind of the levels of people about the issues. And I think, as I said, going back to my book when I was writing Arrival, it was what the players. Battle that kind of came through strongly, and I think this just proves that continues, and it was almost Almost kind of predictable, I think, because a lot of the, well, Spain obviously went into that World Cup with those issues really clear. And actually, at the final, every time their manager appeared on the screen, everybody booed them. So, people were aware of those issues. And a lot of a number of other nations as well. I think I was reading something today, like, I think it was 9 of the 32 nations kind of went into the World Cup with some sort of dispute, whether it was pay, conditions, treatment, so there obviously are issues that women's football has to battle, and I think this has just kind of shown a spotlight on that in a kind of really horrendous, probably the most possible. But in terms of males, females, I mean, everybody just has to be against this and has to stand up to, and what any male can do is be an ally of this and be supportive of the players and what the players are having to put up with, and support people in that fight for equality, because it's essential. We need to get to the point where, I think it was Megan Rapinoe said, we're two battles battling each other on the pitch for equality. We need to get to the point where it's just women are just playing football against each other on the pitch, and the support and what they need to do that is there.
Absolutely, because Eva, we've got a fantastic product, not just here in Scotland, but across the world as well. It's important that that's the paramount importance here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that Stephen kind of touched on there that in the Spanish situation, they went into this competition kind of, overshadowed with the actions of Jorge Vilda and the, number of choosing to play. Football in recent years. We saw the first one in the NWSL with a number of issues there, and Stephen kind of touched on. I don't think this is an isolated incident. This may be the one that's in the press just now, and right people are challenging. But there's the wider issue, and hopefully that is what what we see now as people start talking about it more. More stories come out, we can actually kind of hopefully change the system and change everything. But the Hermoso such the Hermoso incident is awful. It's horrific, and yeah, just shows you what he thought he was going to get away with, I think, by doing it on such a public stage.
Yes, absolutely. I keep, by the way, apologies to the viewers out there. I keep pressing my mute button, so apologies. I just don't want any background noise, especially when I've got two esteemed guests speaking all things women's football. Right, 17 minutes in, off to a great start. Next up, we're going to review the season so far now. I was made very much aware before we started this show that both Eva and Stephen have been away from Scotland until very recently, of course, so I'll be the man in the know. Obviously, I'm the presenter this evening, but I'll be the man in the know regarding a lot more than they will. But what I will say, guys, is what a start to the season we've had. I mean, we've had shocks, we've had massive results, we've had teams that are starting the season very, very well. When you take things into consideration, Rangers and Glasgow City and Celtic have started the season very, very well. I mean, Celtic have only conceded one goal, scored 30, if I'm led to believe. But so they've had a tremendous start to the season. But exactly the same time, I'll start with them, Eva. They've had a really good start to the season. But well, fan awards will be reading too much into it, considering they're four games in and they've played arguably the bottom four teams in the league on paper this season.
Sorry, cracked up a little bit there.
I'm saying, well, fan awards will read much into this season. Sorry, the last four games, because obviously they've played
Yeah.
what you can say in paper, the bottom four teams.
Yeah, no, I think Celtic have had a really, dominant start to the season, and then, like you say, partly of who they've been playing, but also I think, Celtic's already had their own kind of challenges with bringing new players in and losing quite a few of their, couple of the people who were playing in the World Cup, Claire Reardon, Liv Chance was gone, Tash Flint's away to Liverpool. So they've had to do a little bit of reorganizing, so that can't have been easy. So I think they'll be incredibly pleased with the start to their season, and especially that outstanding result against Dundee United. So yeah.
Yeah, when you look at Rangers, Stephen, they were a bit of an unknown quantity before a ball was kicked, because Joe Porter coming in as manager, some new rook players coming in from England. But I watched them against Aberdeen, they hit the ground running against Spartans. They won the game convincingly, but Joe Porter was still expecting more. And obviously, Joe Porter was still a bit frustrated by Sunday's outcome against Glasgow City. So Rangers have started the season well. You're probably looking at it from a Rangers perspective and thinking to yourself, we could do more here.
Yeah, I mean, I think both Celtic and Rangers, I guess, given how, I guess, more so Rangers, how the season finished last year, particularly losing out, in the last day of the season in the league, and then losing the cup final. I think there can be a bit of a kind of a lag of that, or a kind of legacy of that. But obviously, they've started really strongly. I have been to one SWPL game, which was Hearts Rangers, and I have to hold my hand up to kind of slight Hearts allegiance in that game, but. And I was kind of hoping that Hearts would kick on and kind of start to really challenge. And they did give Rangers a really hard game, and kind of were pretty unlucky not to kind of take a point from that. But yeah, Rangers will have been delighted with kind of starting solidly. I think is what it's shown is it's going to be the kind of Rangers, Celtic, Glasgow City games like last year are going to be really, really crucial. And obviously that's where kind of Rangers and Hearts to a certain extent as well. And that's where kind of Rangers maybe came up a little bit short last season and dropped points to Hearts as well. So those games between those teams are going to be kind of really crucial. But with the new manager, they've started well, and to be up there to not have lost both Hearts and Glasgow City, I think is probably as good a place as they could have been really.
Eva, Glasgow City, Leanne Ross, obviously, first full season in charge at Glasgow City. They've got a bit of a unique team with City, but they still seem to have the same identity about them, which doesn't hide away because it's a Glasgow City thing and they're renowned for having a specific culture, a specific identity. But the fact that they went in and basically hit the ground running immediately says a lot about the character from both Leanne Ross, Ross's perspective, also from the players' perspective.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was at the Rangers Glasgow City match at the weekend, and City looked solid all the way through. I think especially when Rangers got that goal, it was with City were back on it with that kind of Lauren Davidson run up the side onto their new signing. And yeah, they looked absolutely solid, even though they've had a little bit of a change in squad as well with players going and new players coming in. They look as if they're well on their way to try and hold on to that title.
Okay, you were at the game on Sunday. Eva, who was the most impressive player for you? Who was the player that you looked at and went, they'll stand out?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm probably going to say a bit of a to Rangers, but I think Mia McAuley was outstanding. It's the first time I've seen her play live, and she's an outstanding youngster. I think she's only like 17, and with every single chance she got, she was up there trying to get a goal, and obviously scored an outstanding goal. But yeah, quality for me.
Yeah, well, same yourself. And I'm going to speak about another youngster, and Emma Watson. Absolutely brilliant for her making the move to Manchester United. It shows the potential that she has, also how good the Scottish game is now.
No, absolutely. I think especially halfway through last season, there was already rumours about Emma Watson going down to the WSL. I think firstly people were thinking maybe Liverpool, but the fact that she's down at Man United is incredible and does show that the work that's been done on the youngsters at the Rangers team, which is really exciting. But it's all the same with Glasgow City. They've got Jenna Clarke, who's just went to Liverpool as well. So it's exciting to see Scottish players down at the WSL.
Absolutely. Stephen, as you said, you were at the Hearts Rangers game last Wednesday. Do Hearts still have the identity of last year? Do they still have the capabilities of last year, the character of last year, or have they changed a little bit?
No, I think they definitely do, and I think, as I said, they were incredibly unlucky the last couple of an injury time. They kind of hit the post and were kind of pushing for an equaliser, and I think Carlo Girasole coming in and at the back, I kind of was interesting in that sense as a kind of player I've obviously known from a few years ago, but to see her come back up to Scotland and step into that Hearts defence, I think is really important, and obviously she can defend, but she obviously scored on Sunday as well. So she can kind of contribute up front as well. So I think Eva Olad, as I said, probably last season Hearts was the team I saw most of, and I mean the improvements under Eva Olad have been amazing really. So I'm kind of hopeful that Hearts perspective at least they can kind of improve on that and continue experience of those teams, but if they're running Rangers close, they will run Celtic and Glasgow close as well. So hopefully they can kind of bridge that gap between the top three. I mean, as someone who lives in the East Coast, the kind of last thing I would like to see is kind of just a kind of Glasgow domination of women's football. We have it in the men's game. I'd kind of I hate to see that happening again in the women's footballs. And so, you know, Hibs have obviously been strong over the years. Hearts have kind of overtaken them a little bit. So I'd like to see both of those teams kind of challenging a bit more and kind of maybe breaking that what's a monopoly or duopoly for the three, sure, but that monopoly that the kind of the three Glasgow teams had last season.
Yeah, absolutely. Stephen's raised a very good point there. And Steve, I'll come back on you in a minute. You're happy to jump in if you have to. But Eva, I mean, Stephen's raised a very good point there. I mean, Hibs had that mentality a couple of years ago that, look, we're not going to settle for mediocrity here. We're going to settle for being one of the better teams in the league. And fair enough, the likes of Rangers and Celtics weren't exactly just on the scene in terms of women's football yet. They weren't full time. And let's be honest, resource wise, Hibs were streets ahead. But exactly the same time, Hibs were setting that benchmark for women's football alongside Glasgow City. So when you look at Hearts now, are they kind of one of those sides that you look at and say, if you can get a result against them, it's a big result, it's a massive result in terms of either title pursuit, or if your team wore down the league, you look at that result and going, we've just got a result against a top four side here.
Absolutely, I think you know Stephen touched on the kind of Glasgow domination, and I usually have a Glasgow bias, but I think it's not you know women's football if we're you know constantly in that battle of just talking about the top three and they're all from you know one side of the. Absolutely, I would consider Hearts. You know, getting a result against Hearts, and I think yeah, not definitely they should be in contention. They've had a really solid start. I think even with the. You know, the Rangers result, but I think it's been a really solid start for them. So yeah, I think they should be pushing for that.
I think the market is there in Edinburgh for I mean the Capital Cups last season were kind of Hearts and Hibs kind of played for a trophy, which, you know, on one level people can say, well, what's the point of that? But actually, those games and having gone to Easter Road and gone to Tynecastle, it was a massive step up. I mean, we've seen the massive steps up in Spain and in England in terms of size. Definitely a kind of massive step up in terms of letting people know that women's football is there and it's hugely entertaining. And that's obviously a step to people coming back on a regular basis. So, and obviously we saw that replicated in kind of the Rangers and Celtic games at the tail end of last season. But anything we can do to kind of improve that, and obviously competitiveness is one of the things that needs to be in there for teams to be kind of competing and whether it's for cups or for the league. And if the Edinburgh teams or others can break into that and do that, I think that can only be good for the whole of the Scottish game.
Yes, definitely. Look at the other side of of Edinburgh there. I was very excited about Hibs until last Wednesday night. Got a very good start to the season, and then a draw with Dundee United and a draw with Spartans. It's changed my perception of Hibs a little bit. Do you agree with that, Eva? Has the perception changed based on the last 7 days?
Yeah, I don't really know what's happening with Hibs, to be honest. I will say that their comeback at the weekend it was quite something, even to get that draw out of it. I think I was watching the kind of review of their head coach afterwards, and he was quite content with that draw because yeah, I think Spartans were from the start you know looking for a fight and they obviously scored a couple of goals but that Hibs comeback. So hopefully we see a bit more competitive from Hibs, but I don't really know what's happening with them at the start of the season. But yeah, no, I would agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, Stephen, when
Yeah,
you
I
look
mean,
at
I think.
on you go, sorry, on you go,
No, I was
sorry.
just going to say, Hibs, I guess, is one of the teams that I know a bit better, having kind of, because we kind of tend to dot around Hibs, Hearts, and Spartans on a Sunday as Raith Rovers fans with no kind of particular allegiance to it. You've got that sort of the World Cup, you can kind of go to any game. But yeah, Hibs feel a bit very much in kind of transition at the moment, or the last couple of seasons, even. I mean, if you go back 3 or 4 years ago when they were kind of really pushing Glasgow City for the title and winning cups against them, and you know, there was a particular game where they beat Celtic 9-0 cup final. You know, it's very different times from now with the investment that's come in, but they have a really strong tradition, but they've been in that kind of transition phase. But you know, in that era, kind of Scott was the manager, so him coming back in, I think it might take a little bit of time to kind of rebuild that, but I'm sure that he will. He'll have been disappointed with the way they've started the season, and but they do have the potential there, I think, to kind of to build on that. And again, they've got a fan base that's kind of growing. I know they're kind of running buses to away games and stuff again, which is fantastic. So again, if they can kind of get over that transition phase and get back competing again, that can be only good for both Hibs and the whole of Scottish football.
Absolutely. Partick Thistle, what a start to the season. They've had 3 wins and 1 loss. That 1 loss was against Glasgow City. Brian Graham's done a tremendous job with Partick Thistle either.
Sorry, what was that? Sorry,
I
if
would
you just
say
cut off.
Brian Graham, what a job he's doing with Partick Thistle. 3 wins and 1 loss. That 1 loss was against Glasgow City.
Yeah, no, Thistle have had a really strong start to the season as well, and I think especially when you're coming from. Was it last season or the season before where they obviously jumped to league because of a number of dropouts and stuff? So they're really a team who are on the up. And I think, yeah, you're right. Williams had such a positive impact and continues to have a positive impact on that Glasgow domination almost because the league is very much 1, 2, 3, 4 just now. But no, I think they'll continue to build and they'll want to continue their kind of winning ways. But yeah, building on the results from obviously last year.
I think it's also the results in the other games away from Glasgow City. I mean, the kind of levels of wins they've had, 5-0 Montrose, 4-0 against Dundee United on Sunday there. I mean, that's really strong performances. It's kind of setting a marker, which is probably no surprise. Again, as a Wraith fan, we had Brian Graham, kind of know hounding he is on the pitch, so I'm sure he's as demanding of his players, but that's obviously kind of coming through and working for them in terms of, and they'll have ambitions to get back in that kind of top six again.
I mean, I watched the Partick Thistle Dundee United highlights in particular, and that was 4-0 going on 7-8-0. Not because how Partick missed, yes, because of how Partick missed chances. Also, just the way they played football, how they cut Dundee United apart, it was very, very good. And Partick aren't a team either that have a standout player. I know. Cara Henderson has earned a lot of plaudits for the way she started the season. However, they're not a one-man team. They're not a one-woman team, sorry. I should clarify that. They're not a one-woman team. But they're a team that just play good football, know how to defend, and are very organised.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think the thing, one of the things about Cara Henderson, as you mentioned, is goals, but she can also be in the position. Do that good pass that needs to be done or make the space. And I think that's but you're right, it's not they're not a one woman team. They're and that's maybe one of the things that they've got on some of the other teams who are maybe in that transition of the rebuild stage because they have for the most part got that connection already.
Stevie, you gonna come in?
Yeah, I mean, I just quite a lot last season, kind of playing Hearts and Hibs, and it's never an easy game. It's almost they remind me of Spartans from a few years ago. They're always really well organized. They're always really difficult to break down, and difficult to beat, I think. And it now looks as if they're kind of adding goals against teams that are around about them. And if they do that, then I think they will definitely be looking at that kind of top six spot again, I think, and the top half of the league rather than the bottom half of the league, which for Thistle is fantastic, obviously.
Yeah, Motherwell now, and two wins out of 4, plus one goal difference. I think if you're Paul Brownlee, either is improvement the big word here? Is it trying to improve on last season? Last season was probably a transition season for Motherwell, just in terms of how they had so much change. Is now the time to go and kick on?
Yeah, I think in the especially in the game against the Accies, I think that in the second half they obviously they turned up and started to get the goals in with the boys and things like that. But no, even under a lot of pressure. But no, I think you're absolutely spot on that it is that improvement. It is instead of it just being the second half, getting there from the very start and showing up because I thought Accies in the first half were the stronger team. And also, I think just to put it on there, like Nicholson, Aki's goalkeeper, was standout player. I think obviously didn't get the result, but some of the saves that she was making was were incredible. So it she didn't make it easy for to be on that improving stage and seeing how they can progress because they've got a couple of outstanding players as well who've been with the club for quite a while.
Quinn Nicholson for Hamilton, what a goalkeeper she is. Arguably could play at a far higher, but I mean, it's all due respect here, could play at a far higher level than Hamilton.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I just saw the highlights of that match and some of the saves that she was making were outstanding and incredible. I think Gemma Faye was talking about it on the highlight show and yeah, just giving her all the praise because it was and it was all different types of saves as well. It wasn't just the one standard, you know, or one goal repeated over and over. She's definitely one to watch, I think.
Yeah, I've seen her in a couple of games. I've seen her in one game against Aberdeen, and Aberdeen were far the superior side in that day in question. And it would have been 4 or 5 had it not been for Chloe Nicholson, which just tells you and explains to you how good a goalkeeper she is. But Stephen, obviously Hamilton, it doesn't feel like a transition because it's basically Robert Watson switching from assistant manager to manager. However,
Yeah.
there is a sense of transition about Hamilton because they're going away from the Gary Doctor identity. They're going with somebody who knows the club, knows the players, knows the women's game, but it hasn't been a manager in a women's game before.
Yeah, I mean sometimes these things kind of take time to kind of bed in, and obviously again they were kind of in the playoff last season and kind of you went along to that and saw them kind of survive, which is obviously fantastic for Hamilton. About, I guess, is they're kind of the number of goals they've conceded. You know, they're already on kind of -17, which is not great. You know, so they'd definitely be looking to, I guess, improve that and try and kind of move on. But I think you know the reality for teams like Hamilton is it's in a small increments and trying to kind of be in a better position. So I guess their aim might be not to be in that playoff and not to be involved down that kind of bottom end, and hopefully they can kind of do that.
One side that will have a transition season this year, and they haven't really said it too much publicly, which is understandable, is Aberdeen. Clive Lancaster coming in, experienced manager in the English leagues, especially with Watford. I think he's managed in the WSL, if I'm not mistaken. Took in some WSL players, albeit maybe loans, not permanent deals as such. But a very comfortable performance because Motherwell on the opening day of the season. A good 2-0 win last Wednesday against Montrose. Rangers and Hearts, either for me, was always going to be too much for Aberdeen at this stage under Clive. But I can see already the positivity and the way in which they've got a new manager bounce a little bit.
Yeah. Aberdeen's one of the teams that I probably know the least about, and just haven't really seen them play. But no, I think from what you said, that's you know all sounds very positive. And yeah, no, I think they're definitely obviously a team on the hopefully on the up and hopefully on the progressing.
I think those kind of size of clubs are a bit like Motherwell to me as well. That kind of Motherwell Aberdeen, they're kind of there or thereabouts. Last season, just missed out on that top six. So I guess their ambition will be to keep building that break into that top six because that can make a huge difference in terms of kind of experience the players get. Like Eva, I'm not overly familiar with Aberdeen. The player, I guess, that stood out for me when I've seen them has been Bailey Hutchison, one of the kind of younger players, as a kind of real talent. But they're one of these clubs I think that need to be looking to kind of kick on, and given the kind of the size of the club in the area, they're obviously hugely important in terms of women's football and being a kind of focal point in that area. So if they can be kind of competing up near the top end of the league over time, then again that should be an ambition really for the whole league.
Well, as John Blaisdell said, Stephen, it's a good job I'm on because we've got a good balance tonight. We've got Aberdeen, Glasgow, Edinburgh. So, yeah, we've got a very
We're
good
just
balance.
missing Dundee.
Yeah. Well, you got Dundonian on. We'll try and get Graham Hart on for the next show. I think he'll be a good appointment for the SFF podcast team. But, yeah, I mean, Aberdeen, right? When they played against Rangers, I watched the game at Alba, and I thought Aberdeen contained Rangers very, very well for the opening half an hour, 35 minutes. And Joe Potter was understandably getting a bit frustrated with obviously the way in which her team were playing. And Aberdeen has a player come off, was it either, I think it was either Thompson. I'll apologise if I've got it wrong, but I think it was either Thompson came off injured. Aberdeen lost their balance from that point onwards. The Rangers were comfortable in the end, but they've got a good cohesion in midfield. They've had a settled team for a long time. I think it just needed freshened up, which they've done that with bringing in players from England. They've brought in a player called Hannah Ince, who's not exactly hit the ground running yet, but she's a fresh player into the team. So that's obviously a positive thing to have. But we'll go into a team now that will probably go under the radar because they've got a minus 11 goal difference. But as you said earlier, Eva, a very solid draw at Hibs on Sunday there.
Absolutely. I think Spartans started really well. Obviously put Hibs under pressure, and then obviously in the second half just it fell away. They had a solid game. Will it be a one-off? Who knows? But yeah, no, I think they had that. They should be happy with the point against Hibs.
I think for me, Spartans is probably what, again, from being from Edinburgh and having watched Spartans a lot, they're always really well organised. They've got some really good talented players in their squad in terms of Alana Marshall. Becky Galbraith up front is always just kind of moving and creating space and scoring. I think just, after 4 games only having 1 point, I think Debbie McCulloch will probably be really kind of disappointed with that. They did, I saw them beat Hibs like I made about last season. Than kind of where they are just now. So, and I know they've had some difficult ties in that kind of opening phase, but hopefully they can kind of get going and get back to kind of what they were over the last couple of seasons, which is really organised. And as I said, with those kind of really kind of creative players able to kind of unpick teams and score some kind of wonder goals as well. So they're always good and entertaining to watch.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Spartans, they've been beat by Celtic, Rangers, and I think, I might be wrong, I think Motherwell, which take Motherwell out of the equation, Spartans aren't going to be defined against the Glasgow teams.
Yeah, I think that's a problem for all of the league, to be honest. I mean, a lot of the kind of from the kind of fourth downwards almost, maybe some of those bigger teams, your Motherwells and will be able to compete, but it's just really hard to compete with the kind of the strong team last season as well. That can be a real challenge because do you just sit and try and frustrate them for? Or do you try and take the game? I mean, I guess it's a mirror image of the kind of Old Firm in the men's game. What's the kind of strategy for that? So, but I think the Rangers, Celtic, Glasgow City, and maybe to an extent Hearts, they've kind of strengthened so much over the last few years that it definitely is creating a kind of a wider gap, and maybe by some of those score lines where. It's very, very difficult, I think, for all those teams in the kind of bottom half of the league to kind of compete against those big three.
Yeah, definitely. And by the way, we better not forget that Spartans draw with Hibs because, Stephen, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not much of a rivalry, but I'm led to believe there is a bit of needle when both sides play each other.
Yeah, I mean, there's a definite. Well, I certainly know Hibs don't like losing to Spartans. Haven't seen the reaction last season, and I think I always feel a bit for Spartans because it's that case when they announced the Capital Cup. I kind of felt, well, where Spartans in that? And
Oh, definitely, definitely.
I can totally understand the kind of marketing of the football and building on that kind of Edinburgh Hearts Hibs kind of rivalry, which does work, but for a number of years, Spartans would have been the kind of second team in Edinburgh, and I mean the amount of work that they do in the community, and particularly in women and girls football as well. Like my daughter played for them briefly, saw firsthand kind of with the kind of coaching and the input and the kind of impact they make in the local community. So they're an absolutely fantastic club. And great to see them come into the league in the men's game as well, in terms of that area of Edinburgh. So I always do feel a little bit sorry for them. But yeah, I think there's definitely a rivalry there. And I think Spartans, whether it's against Hearts or Hibs, I think there is that little bit of a we get forgotten about. You know, we are not getting talked about. And you know, they probably get a lot of pleasure from kind of getting one over on those teams. So I'm sure that injury time equaliser would have hurt them, you know, on Sunday, that they didn't hold on and kind of take not just for the 3 points, but also for getting that win over kind of local rivals, because ultimately they are Edinburgh teams.
Oh, by the way, I resonate Spartans with absolutely fantastic goals. I remember, for those that don't know, I was doing a bit of media work for Forfar Farmington a few years ago during COVID, and they scored a stunning goal against us. So, who scored it? I can't remember who. I think it might have been Alana Marshall that scored the goal, actually. And then I watched them against Aberdeen in the tail end of last season, and it was it Callie Gibb? I think it was Callie
Yeah.
Gibb that hit a stunning 30-yard drive. Into the net. Aberdeen scored a cracking goal in that game as well, but Spartans, they scored a cracking goal as well. And that was a 3-2 Spartans. And I'd argue that was the best women's game I've seen this season, by the way. And it was a dead rubber, essentially. Not that any of the sides would look at it and say it's a dead rubber, but that was essentially nothing to play for either side. And it was a very, very good game to watch. So, yeah, hats off to both teams for that. But we'll go to the Dundee United and Montrose now because we can't leave them under the radar. Well, first and foremost, Steve, what a draw that was for Dundee against Hibs, because when you look at the players they've lost, when you look at how players have went to Montrose from Dundee United, and this was touched upon in last month's podcast. However, Dundee United have had to kind of rejig a lot of things, and it kind of shows that, yes, Dundee United aren't scoring, but boy, are they keeping clean sheets.
Yeah, no, and I think because they've had that decent start, and then the game against Celtic at the weekend, their heads might be down a little bit, but no, I think they'll be quite, you know, apart from the again, not taking the weekend into account, but yeah, the clean sheets is always a positive, and yeah, a
I mean,
difficult one against Celtic, though, incredibly difficult one.
yeah, but Dundee United, Stephen, they're a bit like Spartans that I touched upon. They're not going to get just defined against Celtic. Let's be honest, the Glasgow Three, if we want to put it like that, is streets above your Dundee Uniteds, your Aberdeens, your Hamiltons. And it's not great to say that, but it's just a true indictment of where we are as a league.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the league kind of splits into three. There's a kind of four at the top who will be challenging, probably realistically, maybe three. And then there's a kind of all these kind of middle teams. I mean, and then I guess they're the ones who are kind of struggling to stay at the bottom. I mean, I think we saw with Glasgow Women last season how difficult it is to come up and kind of bridge that gap between SW and SWPL1 for some clubs, the backing of a kind of male club with them. But yeah, so Dundee United kind of would probably have ambitions to be in that kind of middle pack. My worry is the kind of the size of the defeats is can kind of be a demoralizing thing. And yeah, it's not easy against Celtic, but obviously they're already sitting in a kind of -16 goal difference, you know, so kind of similar. So I think there's a kind of worry that, and Hamilton too, there's a kind of worry that you will kind of get detached, and that obviously is still very early. And as you said, their season will be defined by the teams around about them and how they perform in those games rather than the top three or four. But you know, their aspiration should be to be in that kind of middle pack and trying to get into the top six. I think, but there's a danger, I guess, if they don't start winning against teams around about them, that you will be in that kind of bottom part of the league that's going to. It'd be all about survival, really, which I think is the problem for Montrose as well, having just come up.
Yeah, because don't get me wrong, Eva, when I looked at the players Dundee United were losing, Tammy Harkin, Warren Perry, Jade McLaren, Danny McGinley, I feared the worst for Dundee United just because you're taking out the spine of your team with that. I mean, Robin Smith, I think she's a huge player for Dundee United, but taking them four players out, and I think that's your Dundee United spine clearing out the team.
Yeah, no, I think we were talking about rebuilds and other teams, but I think, as you say, when you take so many major players out of a team, then it's either going to take a while to adapt, or it's going to take a you know take a while to adapt, or you know we're going to see re continue to see results like we've seen. But yeah, no, I think like you say, they've kept a couple of clean sheets, and but it'll, that there's no doubt that that loss against Celtic. There's time. There's still time for it to kind of sort itself potentially and start competing against other teams.
I mean, Stephen, we'll get on to Montrose just around the segment off in a minute, but when you look at that end of the league table, I can add Spartans into the Swiss technically, considering they're only 1 point at this precise moment in time. But I do expect and do predict that Spartans will pull clear. But when you look at that four sides, it's going to be rather fascinating when they all do end up playing each other.
Yeah, I mean, much like the top of the league, you know, it's the results against each other that's going to kind of define it. And, you know, we saw last season, you know, kind of Aberdeen and then United pulled away kind of once those kind of results were kind of put into the mix. And Hamilton to a certain extent as well. So, yeah, and I think the way the league operates now, they kind of split top six, bottom six. I think it highlights that even more once you get towards the end of the season because you have got a lot of games against the people around about you, which works beautifully, as we saw of that. Apologies, Eva, but in terms of that, the drama of that last game at kind of Ibrox, you know, it can bring that real drama. And if it can do that at the top, it can also kind of do that at the bottom. I mean, hopefully nobody kind of gets detached in a kind of the way that Glasgow Women did. And we can have a kind of, because to me, a kind of relegation scrap can be hugely entertaining and just as entertaining as the kind of the top of the league sometimes. So, and ultimately, that's what it's about. It's about creating drama, creating excitement, creating entertainment that makes people kind of want to go along and watch games. And that can be equally at the bottom as well. But I agree. I think I kind of would hope the Spartans would kind of lift themselves up and kind of not be in that kind of bottom kind of group of teams over the whole course of a season, when they start playing teams of that kind of level.
So, and I've got an apology to make because on the last month's podcast, I was raving about Montrose. I was going on. I think they'll be well clear of the relegation zone, but they've just not got clicking yet. Minus 18 goal difference, Eva. I spoke to a certain SWPL1 coach. I'm not going to name him just in case I get in trouble, or indeed the guy in question gets in trouble. But I spoke to a certain coach a couple of weeks ago, and he was like, "I can't believe how Montrose played 4-3-3 against Celtic and expect to be competitive within the game." What was it? They were 2 or 3-0 down within a space of 15, 20 minutes, 5-0 down at half time. That just explained everything that happened in that game.
Oh, absolutely. And then you obviously have the result against Partick Thistle there, and I think Stephen kind of touched on, you know, these clubs who are coming up from SWPL2 and maybe having a decent start or having a good result against someone, and then it kind of falls apart when they get to some of the bigger teams. And I think is I want a league that is as competitive that you know, we're seeing, you know, it's not just the domination. And if a club sees that they're coming up against, you know, one of the top four, that they know they're going to get pelted or they have to park the bus, or you know, that's the strategy. You know, we want to see a competitive league where people are getting that opportunity. But no, it's a difficult one for Montrose, especially making that transition, which Stephen's obviously talked seen in past seasons has been incredibly difficult for clubs.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm the same. I think you just want a league to be competitive. I think going back, World Cup, one of the great things about the World Cup is my worry when they expanded it, you know, as you would see big kind of score lines, and that just didn't materialise. You know, everybody could compete and everybody could, you know, get a chance, and some of those kind of smaller teams actually got through to the round of 16, while your Germany's and Canada's and stuff kind of didn't. So again, you know, it will take time and SWPL, I think there's always going to be a natural kind of big team, small team thing, but hopefully over time, you know, the teams both at the bottom of the SWPL1 and in SWPL2 can kind of strengthen and develop, and then that gap becomes less. We do see kind of, I'd like to see less of this kind of 7-8-9-0 wins. You know, I don't think that's good for either the team that's winning, the team that's losing. So I think, or the league in general. So if we can kind of narrow that gap, that would be fantastic. But obviously, given resources support that's there is it is difficult at the moment.
I think Metropolis is in this still to develop category either, because Hibs have played them, Partick Thistle have played them, and let's be honest, they're probably just a bridge too deep for Celtic's level. And Hibs and Partick Thistle were still fairly comfortable. I watched the first half of Hibs against Montrose, and Montrose did steady the ship in the second half. But I watched the first half of that Hibs Montrose game via Hibs' live stream, and Hibs were very, very comfortable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you're right. They to go through the development stage. I think one of the positives, though, is that there's other clubs in that league who have been through that development stage and put the resources in and have shown within a couple of years what can be done. So, difficult right now or look difficult just now, especially with some of the results from Montrose. But I think the same was for some of the other teams in that bottom half of the league just now, that the development can be done if the resources are there, which is obviously I know easier said than done, but if we see it as a development stage and they continue to work on that, then there's no reason why they can't be sitting, middle table or competing a bit more with some of these bigger clubs in the years to come, potentially if they manage to stay up.
Yeah, absolutely. So that will
Yeah,
end up.
I think if you
Oh,
look at
sorry,
their,
Stephen,
if you
sorry,
look at
go,
their role
sorry.
model, I'm just going to say, if you look at the role model for that, I think, Partick Thistle is one that kind of came up and have managed to get into that top six last season and, start the season really well this season. So there is that potential there, as Eva said, resources are there, which is always the kind of big question. But there are clubs that have done it. So I think that's the thing for clubs to look at and say, well, how are they doing it? How can we kind of replicate that or build our own model that will kind of get us to the same point? And hopefully that kind of raises the bar for everybody.
Yep, absolutely. Right, let's preview this weekend's games. Obviously, we've still got Scotland, England, the small factor of that to discuss in the show, but we'll focus on this weekend. We'll do a wee bit of the SWPL too as well. It's the Sky Sports Cup this weekend as well. But I'll just do a predict. I won't just ask you for analysis, guys. We'll just do a predictions thing for this weekend. So, Eva, I'll start off for yourself. Glasgow City against Hearts. It's getting played on Saturday at 6 p.m.
Sorry, again. I just
Glasgow City against Hearts on Saturday. What are your predict? What is your predictions?
I think Glasgow City will win it, but I would hope that Hearts kind of push them the same way that they've done in recent matches, and it's not as easy as they maybe think it will be. But against Rangers at the weekend shows me that they're definitely up for a fight even at the start of the season and kind of retaining that title.
Stephen.
Again, I would like to see Hearts win. I would say Hearts would beat them, but I think again, it's just probably a step too far, given particularly it's at City at Petershill as well. So I think probably a one goal win for City in that. Apologies, Hearts fans.
Hibs against Celtic.
Yeah, no. Again, I would like to see a more competitive match, but just the way that Hibs have kind of started the season, I think it'll be quite a comfortable couple of goals win, to maybe 2-3 for Celtic, to be honest.
Yeah, I would echo that. I think Hibs are kind of still transitioning and still trying to find their feet. So I think you're probably looking at a kind of 3-4 goal defeat there away Celtic are flying.
I think Glasgow City will beat Hearts, but it'll be like the old goal in three. I think I'm fancy 2-1 City. I don't think it'll be as comfortable as what people are going to perceive it to be. And I think Celtic will win 3-0. I'm going to go for that. A massive game at the bottom, and we've just spoke about it. Hamilton against Dundee United.
Yeah, no, that'll be one of the interesting ones. Again, it's just two kind of clubs that I'm not as familiar with. I think it'll be interesting to watch them play. I think potentially, we've talked about it earlier, like Nicholson and as keeper could potentially keep a few of those shots out that Motherwell managed to get past there, but maybe Dundee United aren't as confident on. So maybe I would say maybe a 2-1 Accies, but I don't know. That's one of the ones I'm not 100% on.
Yeah, I think that's a difficult one to predict. I'll go for a I think I'll go for a safe draw on that one.
I was between a draw and saying a score, but yeah, I'll put my neck on that one.
I'm going to go with you, Eva. I do fancy Hamilton to
Okay.
win. I think Hamilton have
Yeah.
got the bit between their teeth just now. I know Dungeonite won a lot of these kind of battles last year because they were hotly contested, but I think Hamilton just have the better about them. And by the way, if Dungeonite do go, well, I'm looking forward to Graham Hart's phone call on Sunday night, but there we go. A game for me that will be a good barometer for Montrose, but a good confidence booster from Motherwell as well. How do you think it's going to go? The game is at East Kilbride.
Yeah, I think Motherwell probably will have that one, but I think, as you said, I think it'll be a good kind of gauge for Montrose to see where they are. They're a match against a team in that kind of same kind of side of the league just now for as them. So yeah, I think it'll be a test for them. But yeah, maybe an equal game. So I think Motherwell might just scrape it with that home advantage. But
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm gonna go 2-0 Motherwell.
Yeah, I'm going to even bigger than that. I think 4-0 Motherwell. Like having come off the back of beating Hamilton so comfortably, I think, Paul Brown, Leanne Crichton, all kind of, they're on it. They'll start a bit of a roll there, I think. And they'll see that as an opportunity to kind of get another win and kind of consolidate that kind of middle of the table position. So I think a 4-0 Motherwell.
Another interesting one, this Rangers against Partick Thistle. For Rangers, it's win. Be ruthless. For Partick Thistle, it's can we get that big result now? Can we get to that next level?
Yeah, no, I think that the test is with Partick Thistle there. They've already shown in the first couple of matches that they mean business, and it's also a test for Rangers not to underestimate Partick Thistle thing. I think, I mean, I'm for a Rangers win. I don't think Thistle are going to make it easy. And my only hope would be that Rangers don't take them for granted or underestimate them, because I do think just from the recent results that Thistle have really stepped up just at the start of this season and do mean business.
Yeah, I think this is a real kind of this is the real test of Partick Thistle. They've had a fantastic start. It's these kind of games of whether they can almost do a little bit of what Hearts did last season and kind of take a point here or there, or maybe even sneak a win. So I'm going to be optimistic and say that they will do on Sunday. So I'll go for a draw.
Vinnie Ferguson, our Ville SFF podcast pundit, will be absolutely delighted that you've just went and said that, Steve. It's a fair play. I'm going to go for. I think it'll be close. I don't think it'll be comfortable. This. I'm going to go 3-1 Rangers. I think Partick Thistle will score. And to round things off, Spartans against Aberdeen. Well, first and foremost, if Aberdeen go win that on Sunday, that bridges a massive gap between them and Spartans. But Spartans. It's an opportunity to start the season.
Yeah, no. Again, I said Aberdeen, our team, I don't really know much about, but I do know a bit about Spartans. So yeah, no, I think it'll be an interesting match. I think we'll edge it, but yeah, Spartans.
Yeah, I mean, I went to the equivalent fixture last season in this, I think. All, I mean, really kind of entertaining and kind of tight game as well, which I suspect the same. But I think Spartans probably their need is greater. So, and after that kind of conceding that kind of last injury time goal, I think probably Spartans will kind of edge it. David McCulloch will have them kind of up for it, I think. So I'll go 3-2 Spartans. Lots of goals.
I was tempted to put my Aberdeen hat on and go for an Aberdeen win, but having seen that Spartans result last Sunday, just 3 days ago, I think I'm gonna go sit the fence and say a 1-each draw here. So I think that's gonna be a very close game. Sky Sports Cup, I won't ask you for predictions. Queen's Park against Glasgow Women, St Johnstone against Livingston, Gardkiln against Kilmarnock, and Still University against Moira Thistle. Right. To go round things off, well, what a spectacle we've got in Sunderland in a couple of weeks' time. England versus Scotland. Tell me everything that I need to know about this fixture, Eva.
Yeah, I know it's exciting for them. I think both teams. I think it's exciting that we're going to get a chance to play the Lionesses, and also some of the youngsters in the Scotland team to get to play against best and then the world's second best. I'm not actually managing to make it down to Sunderland, which I'm a bit gutted about. But no, I think it's It'll be exciting. I think a lot of people will have their money on England, probably rightfully looking at all the stats. But I would just never count Scotland out in these games. I think that we will show up, and it'll be a great opportunity for us before they come up to Hampden in December.
Yeah, I think to the game, and I think with all the Nations League games, it's a mixture of kind of excitement and absolute fear, I think, because I think England are having seen them just recently. I don't think they were at their greatest year in the world, to be honest, but having seen them at the Euros at home last summer or two, yeah, last summer, I mean, they can be really kind of phenomenal when they kind of get on their game. And that kind of worries me a little bit, I think. And I mean, it's going to be a huge test for Scotland to kind of show where we are in that. Be back at tournaments, we have to kind of be at least be competitive. I don't know. I can't see us winning, but hopefully we can kind of keep it tight and maybe get a draw or something.
I mean,
My
it's so.
worry is we go into these Nations League and take some really difficult defeats, and then the kind of whole project is kind of set back again. So yeah, but I mean, it does coming on the back of the men's game at Hampden as well. It does a nice double header.
No, I think you're right. I think we need to see it as a gauge almost to see how the team are and how we play against England. I saw England against China in the World Cup, and when they show up, they really do show up. And I think obviously we've got the Netherlands as well in our Nations League a group and Belgium, but Netherlands is going to be another. No, I think you're right to say that hopefully we might manage to scrape a draw out of that. But I'll be the optimist and say, maybe England take us for granted and underestimate Scotland. But I don't know if that'll happen.
I think for me the it's been kind of hot and cold. It's looked as if it's kind of getting on track, and then there's a kind of set. Obviously losing really heavily to Spain, but then a fairly credible kind of 2-0 defeat with Hampden. So again Austria beating Austria, which was great, and then so I think the Nations League it's kind of it has to be some sort of progress, I think, to kind of give people a sense of, look, this is kind of going to get better, and we're going to be back at tournaments. I think, as I said, my fear is just, the occasion takes over, and kind of England kind of go on our, they have some fantastic players that can take you apart. I don't think the defenses of Scottish defence is the kind of strongest part of our squad, so we'll really need to be total on our game to kind of get anything out of that, I think.
The start of Stephen Walver book 3.0 then.
Yeah, well, I'd like, and maybe it's just years of being a Raith Rovers and Scotland fan, the kind of pessimism is in your blood. But yeah, no, I don't know. I think I've had kind of, it's just been hot and cold, and sometimes it looks good, sometimes it doesn't. And I think if anything through, it's not. I think we particularly need wins in these Nations Leagues game. We just need some sign of cohesion, a structure, and a kind of progress that we're, once we do get to the qualifying groups where it's all the teams that are not going to be this strong, we'll be up against, that we can kind of compete and get back to our Euros, which has to be the aim, and then I can write about it.
I mean, Eva, what an atmosphere it's going to be, both in terms of the stadium alike, but what an atmosphere Hampden is going to generate as well. Because what's the record attendance is 16,000, Steve, 18,000?
Yeah, I think it was 18,000 against Jamaica for the pre-World Cup send-off.
I might be wrong. I think it was John Blaisdell brought this point up to me. I think there's something wrong if we're not breaking that barrier when we play England at Hampden.
No, absolutely. I think even just when you're seeing from the Sunderland ticket sales, and obviously it's a big deal for the England side. It's their first match, time again, break records and sell out stadiums all over England. But I think that there's no reason why we wouldn't be able to to do that at Hampden, and hopefully we do. And I think part of that is, and I know Rachel Corsi has brought it up multiple times, is actually opening Hampden up and actually making sure that the tickets are on sale, and if some of the sections are selling out online, let's open more so people have plenty of time to actually buy them up, and make sure we do try and sell that out, because I don't think that's being done just some of the Nations League matches, but there's absolutely no reason why we can't absolutely get the numbers in and break that record. I think it would be outstanding to do it again in England as well, and if because we're going to show up in Sunderland, there's no reason why the Tartan Army can't show up in December at Hampden.
Yeah, I mean, it is the opportunity to break. If ever there's an opportunity to break that record, that is it, isn't it? It was a game against England at Hampden. So, and part of that is hopefully being competitive in the away leg, so that we're kind of that people aren't thinking, "Oh well, we're going to beat, so let's not bother going." So, but the SFA really have to kind of get behind it and get it marketed in the same way that they do with the men's game, the men's match as well, to kind of get that crowd up.
I don't know if you'll agree with me here, guys, but I hope you understand where I'm trying to come from here. Do you think this tournament is kind of Pedro Martinez Oza is going to get judged a lot more on? Because if we look back to a few years ago, obviously Scotland did ever so well in the Shelly Kerr, where they were consistent in tournaments, getting in the knockout stages of tournaments, getting in the group stages of tournaments. Obviously, we all know what happened in 2019 with VAR. The less said about that, the better. However, at exactly the same time, Shelly Kerr, to a certain extent, was judged on Easter Road 2020 during COVID. Pedro Martinez Loza, is there this perception that he's going to get judged based on how he gets on in the Nations League, or is that irrelevant?
I mean, no, I think he will do. I mean, as I said, I think it's been kind of hot and cold, and apparently from people I've spoken to, there's people who believe in it, there's people who are unconvinced by it. But I think, it is, I don't think you'll get judged on the results in the sense that whether we win or lose, I think it's the manner of the kind of, I mean, the classic example is the two games against Spain and qualifying for the World Cup. Being beaten 8-0 was unacceptable. Being beaten 2-0 at Hampden was acceptable. So it's more about the performances, I think. Nobody will deny that these games are going to be tough. Even Belgium are going to be tough. But I think it's about the performances. And I think if we go through this and take it really bad sort of beatings, which hopefully we don't, but if that is the case in a number of games, then I think inevitably there's going to be question marks raised, I think, of what direction are we going in? Are we making? Because, as I said, we have to be back at when you see the nations that qualified for the last Euros, and took their opportunity of a kind of widened tournament, we have to take our opportunity for that as well. So it inevitably is going to be judged, I think, on the performances, if not on actually whether he gets the win against some of these bigger nations or not.
I think Stephen's spot on there. I think that you've already said that we had some decent results, had some good results, and then some awful results. And I think when you see some people on these forums and things who are, everyone's going to be a bit reactionary about one or two results right after them, absolutely. But if it's continuous, if we're not getting the results, then absolutely it'll be judged on this. And I think everybody acknowledges that the three nations that we've got in our group are not going to be easy opponents. I think people will take that into account. But again, if it's heavy defeat after heavy defeat or a bad performance, then I think people will be judging them on that.
Because it's probably important that Scotland do go and take that extra step now. You see how women's football is evolving. You're seeing how, although I know we've touched upon it at the top of the show, where teams are looking for either financial help or resources or accommodation in certain teams' situations. But at exactly the same time, we're looking at it from a Scotland perspective and going, could we get left behind here if we don't have a good tournament? At exactly the same time, I think this tournament will be a true indication to see how things are we're falling off the park, because this time last year, of course, there was also this big hoorah about obviously the whole SFA fallout because of a lack of resources that Rachel Corsi has publicly came out and expressed.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like a bit of a critical moment. I mean, talking about it, but when I kind of finished my book, it felt it was on the cusp of something great. That, yeah, we'd qualify for two tournaments and it had been brilliant, but it felt like we're really on now. And obviously that's kind of stalled over the last 3 or 4 years. And I think we've seen from the World Cup how nations are improving, and some of the so-called smaller nations are kind of taking their chances and improving, and the quality is improving. And that's Europe as well. So some of the nations in Europe that we might have routinely beaten in these qualifying groups are going to get better and are going to improving as well. And I think that if we miss another tournament, it goes into a third tournament without Scotland, particularly Euros, which is on paper kind of easier to qualify for than a World Cup. Then I think we're going to be in a very difficult position, I think.
Yeah,
You
no,
have.
absolutely. I think, yeah, no, I was just going to say, yeah, you see, these nations across the world, either post World Cup or even just before the World Cup, getting this investment that it was needed. It was acknowledged that, the resources or investment was needed to get them to that next stage. And I think it's now about how does Scotland do that to make sure that we do qualify for the Euros and also the next World Cup. And I don't think that kind of funding or resources can be reactionary or a reward for getting to these. I think it has to be continuous because that's the only way we're going to continue to develop and not hit that kind of pause like it feels like we have right now.
Yeah, definitely. But when you look at women's football in general, we've got an extremely strong product. Do you see any changes towards the squad? Because without going too analytical into the squad here, either five players that I'm going to look out for that I think need a good tournament for me are Leah Alexander, because it's arguably going to be one of her last tournaments, Rachel Corsi. Because I think she deserves another crack at a major tournament. I don't know if she'll get picked, but I'm probably going to go for Lisa Robertson if she does get picked. I'll go for Erin Cuthbert because, again, she deserves a big tournament and she's been very vocal publicly in saying that. And I'm probably going to go for Caroline Weir because we just know how good a talent Caroline Weir is.
Yeah, no. I think that with the squad right now, you've got a good mix of the, for lack of a better term, the kind of veterans and also the young bloods coming in. And I think my choices would be very similar. And I think it's based on people like Rachel Corsi getting. I think she does deserve another shot at the a major tournament. I was sad that Jen Beattie decided to give up the national team before giving it another shot. I think Caroline Weir is again. I would get love to see her get there. But also some of the younger ones coming up. And we already mentioned her earlier. But Emma Watson I think is a real star coming up in the Scotland team. I'd love to see her get the opportunity. Nicola Dockery as well. I think absolutely, yeah. But I think we've got a really strong squad who really have a balance, and it's just about some of the other matches they've played since the Irish match have shown that they have kind of collected themselves and are going again. And I think it's a really good balance. But also Erin as well. I know you mentioned, yeah, but she's again another a star in the Scotland squad.
Yeah, I think for me, it's finding the way to play. I think we've got those kind of quality there. It's just finding the way and system that's going to kind of get the best out of them, and get us over the line in those kind of crucial games like the Ireland game, or games that went before that as well for the previous qualifiers, where we dominate the game and convert it to getting the win. I think it's finding a system to do that is the key thing.
Finally, guys, what is success for Scotland in the Nations League?
What a success. The pessimist of me would say not getting hammered, but I think you would be looking to get the better of Belgium and looking to kind of, particularly at Hampden, maybe take points off England and Netherlands. I mean, England and Netherlands saw both at the World Cup, both really strong teams, really talented teams. Particularly, I love watching the Netherlands play, and I think it's going to be really difficult away from home against them. But we should be looking to kind of take some points off them, I think. But Belgium is probably a better marker of where we're at in terms of actual further qualification for further tournaments, because that's the types of teams the better of and get in front of to get to Euros and to get to World Cup. So hopefully solid wins at Hampden, a few and points off the big ones.
Yeah, no, I think yeah, Stephen's spot. I think Belgium are obviously our not easiest targets. I think it's still going to be a challenge, but our easy some points and a couple of wins. I saw the Netherlands play a couple of times at World Cup, and they are some team. They are solid, and I think they're still obviously we saw them under Suna Wiegman's kind of managerial beforehand, and she's really built them, continued that kind of dominance, and obviously we know what England can do when they show up. So I think we're hoping for hopefully get a decent result at home at the home tie, and yeah, hopefully challenge them a wee bit, and again hope maybe they'll underestimate Scotland, but I don't know about that. But no, two incredibly strong teams in the Netherlands and England, and I do think if Scotland do show up, that we could potentially get a point out of them at Hampden.
I'm going to envisage success in two parts here. My first part is absolutely on the park because, first and foremost, as you've said, both of you, we need to be fairly competitive in these games and we need to make sure we're trying to get some form of results. Performances are obviously absolutely humongous for us as well. So that's one part. The second part, you probably agree with this if you don't, I'll understand if you don't. Second part for me is trying to make sure we're maintaining the high attendances that we've had because we've seen a rapid increase in terms of the attendances over the last few years, ever since that 2019 game against Jamaica. We've seen crowds just rising all the time, and that's only going to grow us moving forward. And the sky's the limit now. We've got an opportunity as a nation to keep growing in terms of attendances, getting grassroots players playing the game we love, and also making sure that the Scottish national team is continuing to do the fine work that they continue to do, but also the club mentality, the football club mentality that isn't that's different to an international mentality, I think is going to be massive for Scotland as well.
Yeah, I think both of those things are related. I think to get the attendances up, we have to kind of be competing and have decent performances on the park. I've got to be honest, disappointed in kind of the attendances at Hampden for the qualifiers and for the. I know it has gone up, and but if you look around elsewhere in Europe, we've seen kind of massive leaps forward, and I'd feel as if we've kind of not really got that. For the Scotland games, and I'm not sure why that is the case. Maybe it is just because we're not at tournaments and you don't get that exposure, but are put behind it to try and get it to that level. I mean, for a game against England, we should be thinking 20, 30,000, it should be the kind of bare minimum, really, of getting people into the ground. But the attendances haven't really been hitting that, and I'm not sure why that is, but I'd like to see a bit more kind of effort and resource going into at least attempting that and have an ambitious target of that.
You know, I think the SFA need to get behind that, start doing the legwork to try and get that. If the England matches the goal for trying to, obviously we should be trying to against Belgium and the Netherlands as well. But we've got 5th of December, I think, is aim for that and try and get that record crowd now from what I've seen in recent matches. That effort and resource just hasn't been put into it. But I think you hit on a really important point about that. The grassroots level as well, and making sure we have that starting at that level, and making sure young people, especially young women, are able to continue playing the game they love, and the resources are there, and they don't walk away out of whatever reason, and also the club side of it, trying to encourage people to get out and support whatever league it may be, their local club on a Saturday or a Sunday, and getting them to them to try and get the attendances up there, because at this so the world we are seeing that kind of grow quite a bit, whereas in Scotland it does feel that even though we are growing, it's not at the same rate as other places. So maybe it's like sort of what are they doing different? I think that does start with I mean, for a lot of people, it will start with going to see their national team play, going to see Scotland play, and falling in love with the game that way, and watching live football. So I think that's where the SFA and whoever else that maybe need to step in and put that extra effort in and put the and I think we saw it when played Jamaica just before the 2019 World Cup, where that effort was put in and we broke that record. So why can we not do it again and bigger this?
Oh, absolutely, totally. I totally agree with that, Eva. So, thanks very much to everybody for joining in. Much appreciated. I hope you all listen, pardon me, because we say we're not live. We're not live. We wish we were live, but we're not live. So, no, thanks very much, Eva Murray and Stephen Lawver, for joining myself, Mr. Dave Smith, on this fine Wednesday evening. It's been a cracking show, guys. And by the way, this won't be a one-off because you'll definitely be back very, very soon. So thanks very much, guys, and obviously take care. We don't know what the plan of action is going to be for moving forward, but we are planning a podcast for the England-Scotland game. So we don't know when that will be, but we plan to have that within the next 2 to 3 weeks. So stay tuned for that, and we'll catch up very, very soon. Thank you very much.